to make you cry, make you break down and shatter your illusions of love. And is it over now? Do you know how? Pick up the pieces of your
everybody. This is Jennifer Hill, and I am the host of Skeleton Shelter, and this is my co-host, Patty Rothberg, and today, our special guest, Lauren Peterson. So we are here today. Like we said, we talk about the tough subjects of gaslighting and narcissistic abuse and domestic violence, and today we are going to be talking about narcissistic personality disorder and some of the things that come about from narcissistic personality disorder, as well as some of the terms like flying monkey, gray rock. Some people were asking me about what gray rock means and how to actually implement gray rock. I just got a message from someone regarding that. So we're gonna take some questions today. So if you feel like there's something that kind of sparks your interest or something that you'd like to know about while you're listening to us, you can put a question under any place that you're watching us, pretty much. We're sort of watching our pages that you're replying to. And if you reply to the mainstream, we'll also have that sent over to us and try to answer any questions that we possibly can. So how's everybody doing today?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to hearing what everyone has to say on this.
Lauren, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and just about what you do, you know, what you do to help people that have dealt with some of these disorders affecting them. And then what I was thinking is maybe after we talk a little bit about that, we can do a grounding exercise. I know the people listening may be triggered by what we're talking about today. Maybe some of us may be triggered from the fact that we've gone through it. So maybe a grounding exercise would be nice for everybody involved. So we'll give you the mic right now, and then we'll join you in a grounding exercise.
Thanks, Patty and Jen. So I'm Lauren Peterson. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Connecticut, and I am adjunct clinical faculty at Central Connecticut State University in the marriage and family therapy program. I am a contributor to the Honor Grace Project's Facebook page blog, and I am a therapist, a trauma therapist, and I am a supervisor. So teaching about the impacts of trauma is one of the things that I do, whether I'm with my students or I'm with supervisees or I'm with clients that I'm seeing. And my practice is in Kensington, Connecticut, and I see people in my office. I'm full-time as a therapist, and I see people in my office on a daily basis, and probably 70 to 75% of the folks that I see weekly have a diagnosis of either PTSD or complex PTSD. And so I've been in this field now for about 15 years, and I specialize, like I said, in treating trauma and whether that develops into post-traumatic stress disorder or complex PTSD. Life is full of trauma, as we all know, right? And so many of the things that I do are around self-care, are around regulating the nervous system. One of the biggest symptoms, I guess, of PTSD and NCPTSD is a overactive central nervous system. And so what that means and what that looks like is feeling anxious, is constantly worrying, is constantly looking over your shoulder, is difficulty sleeping, difficulty regulating yourself emotionally. So a big part of what we do is work to regulate the central nervous system. And I do that through a number of different modalities. I utilize EMDR and I utilize internal family systems. They're two evidence-based models of practice for the treatment of PTSD and CPTSD. And I like to pull in other fun stuff like crystals and aromatherapy and animals and exercise and food and you name it, whatever works for people, we do it.
Well, I think that's really awesome. And I don't have a problem with saying that you are the person that first got me to like figure out what was going on with me and realize that even though a lot of people have told me that I was necessarily crazy for the thoughts that I had in my head, that it was a lot of gaslighting because a lot of us didn't even know what that term was. I'm very open with my therapy on my, you know, on my pages because I feel like that's something that people need help with. And I know myself, the stigmas of like, you know, having something like that going on with you. And I'm really thankful that I found someone that does utilize all those different things because I think it's really hard for people to find someone that they actually can relax with because relaxing with your therapist is like not the easiest thing. And then you're being told to relax your body. So I definitely appreciate all the different things. So whenever I, you know, talk about things with people, I'll say to them, you know, I'm lucky because I really am into smells, and I'll say something to my therapist and I'll get a little aromatherapy thing to leave with. And it helps me. And I'm like, oh, okay. Now I have this little thing in my pocket and I just smell it. And I like feel better. You know, and it's little things that help people out. And I think also with the grounding techniques, we'll try one, whatever you want us to do. I mean, we can stand up, we can tell us what to do and we'll do it. And if you're watching, anybody that's watching, we can't really see what's happening live because it's kind of hard for me to monitor that other page right now. But if you're doing this with us, you can like follow along and we'll follow Lauren and do some grounding before we get started. And if you have a crystal, if you have a selenite crystal or something and you want to grab it, now is probably the time. That's what I need to send you, Patty, is a selenite crystal. It's like my favorite thing ever. I don't know why. I just like the feeling, the vibration of selenite.
Is it really large?
I don't have one here, but it doesn't have to be large. It's just white. It's like a white, yeah, it's like shiny white kind of
secret. Okay, there's... Oh, cool.
And it's, I don't know, very grounding for me. So I'll have to send you one of those. You probably can get one in New York easier though than I can get one.
I wouldn't know where.
The street from somewhere, but yeah. So anyway, if you have a crystal or you have some aromatherapy you want to throw on, let's get grounded.
All right, excellent. So I'm going to lead you through a guided meditation, breathing exercise. And so, you know, I'll invite folks to close your eyes if you feel comfortable doing that. You absolutely do not have to close your eyes. You can just watch the screen and follow my voice. So what we're going to do is start by making sure that you're sitting or laying down in a supported way. So with your back resting against something and your feet on the floor. And the reason why we want your feet on the floor is because that's your grounding connection to the earth. So many times when we struggle with the effects of trauma, it feels like we're floating around. And so connecting with the earth is super important. So with your feet on the ground, and if you have a crystal, you can hang on to that and start following your breath in through your nose deeply to fill your chest, your lungs, expand your diaphragm, and then exhale. And for those of you who are singers, you know how to breathe. And so you're following your breath in and out. And you can say to yourself silently, in and out as you breathe. And our breath is one thing that we have, that we always have access to, no matter where we are or what we're doing. We can always bring our awareness to our breath. And that reminds us sometimes to breathe, because we hold our breath a lot. And it reminds us that we have a body and we have this function in our body that we can control and use to calm ourselves. So we're going to breathe in and out. Five times at your own pace, a relaxed pace. And notice the temperature of the air as it comes in through your nose and goes down into your lungs is cooler than the air when it's coming out. And the air you're breathing in is filled with life force energy. This is where we get our life from, is the air that we breathe. And notice different parts of your body, how your feet feel on the floor, how your body feels being held by whatever you're sitting on or laying on. You are here in this moment with us. And I want to invite everyone to make sure that they're taking care of themselves, because when we talk about trauma and narcissistic personality disorders, it's can be incredibly triggering. And so whatever you have in your arsenal of tools to use, if you find yourself getting triggered throughout the conversation, please, please use them. Get up, go to the bathroom, take a break, do whatever you need to do, because the most important thing that we have is ourselves and our awareness of how we're feeling. Okay, so one more last deep in-breath and out-breath. And if your eyes have been closed, you can go ahead and open them up and bring your awareness back to the room that you're in.
That was awesome. How do you feel, Patty?
I feel a little, I feel more grounded and more aware of myself, more aware of my breathing. It was nice just hearing someone sort of tell me what to do and just have a focus, you know, rather than being scattered or running around, whatever. And my crystal was Play-Doh, which is actually quite effective because, first of all, it smells good. And and we were talking about aromatherapy. It reminds you of your childhood and like positive memories. And it can be whatever you want it to be. It's fun to play with. I know it's not a crystal. Leave it to me to be the weirdo in the show, but I don't have a crystal here, so.
That's okay.
No, yeah, and that's what's important is that for you, it has a positive association, and it makes you experience something positive.
Definitely.
So it can be Play-Doh. It can be a jar full of bugs. It doesn't matter what it is.
Whatever makes you happy. But yeah, that was nice. It was nice to hear you talk and talk us through the breathing and that we always have that. It's true. At least we hope so.
Yeah, no, we do. And one of the most common things that I hear from folks is that they don't realize that they forget to breathe sometimes. But once they start paying attention, they realize that they're forgetting to breathe an awful lot.
I know.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Giving you headaches to not have enough oxygen in your brain. Go ahead, Jen.
I was just saying, I notice that sometimes, and then I'll just let it out. Like, I'll be like, and someone next to me will be like, what's wrong? I'm like, nothing. I'm just breathing. Like, I'm just breathing. I realized I was like not breathing. So I know that I do that a lot. I have to bring myself back in and be like, okay, breathe.
Right. I do that too. Like I'll sigh, but it's not like a distressed kind of a sigh. And so people that I'm with will be like, are you okay? Is everything okay? And I'm like, yeah, I just realized that I wasn't breathing.
Yeah. It was a big breath. Well, so I don't know, like if you have a specific, if there's something, some background or something you'd like to give, I have some questions, mostly from a lot of people who have dealt with narcissistic abuse as kids and sort of grew up with it. There's different things, so I'm not sure what you would like to start with, but I know we're talking about sort of coping mechanisms right now, so I didn't know if now would be the good time to talk about what gray rock means, because a lot of people have been kind of asking that, or if maybe we should talk about what it means, like narcissistic abuse first and then go into that. Tell me how you would do that.
So I think it makes sense to give some context in terms of the experience of being a survivor, because I think that that's what your viewers and your listeners identify as, is survivors, right? And so I think overall the biggest experience for survivors of living with and being cared for by people who have narcissistic personality disorder is feeling and believing that they're crazy, believing that everything is their fault, that all bad things that happen are because of something that they've done, and that they're unlovable and broken. And so on the flip side is identifying and knowing if the person that you're in relationship with has narcissistic personality disorder. This is a diagnosis that a medical professional or a psychiatric or psychological behavioral health professional has to make.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, just like any other mental health diagnosis, depression, anxiety. The tendency in the world is to say, oh, I have bipolar disorder because I am moody a lot, right? Like, but the terms get thrown around a lot, and it's super important to know the difference between somebody who is demonstrating the characteristics that are commonly associated with a narcissistic personality disorder versus someone who has been diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder. And part of the struggle with this is that people who have these characteristics, these personality characteristics, are oftentimes not going to therapy because the overall belief system is that there's nothing wrong with me. I'm fine. It's everybody else around me. So if I'm seeing anyone in my office, it's typically because their partner has brought them in to try to work on the relationship.
Yep. I could see that. So if somebody was to try to define the two differences, what is a big difference? Like what is a red flag that this is narcissistic abuse as opposed to, you know, this narcissism?
So it's abuse and trauma are about how you, the person who's being abused and traumatized, experiences it, right? So if you are with a person, I'm looking around because I have a map somewhere here in my office. So if you notice that you are living in the cycle of abuse, there are three stages in the cycle of abuse, right? And it just loops around and around and around. And the first is like sort of when things are good and the abuser is complimenting you and doing nice things for you and taking you out to dinner and being very endearing, right? Then the next phase is when there's insults, there's name calling, there's bullying, there's some physical contact, intervention, abuse. And then the person who's on the receiving end of this is starting to pull away sometimes, starting to beg and plead. I'm gonna not try to multitask because that doesn't work. But I will put a link that we can share that is a that identifies what this cycle is. So then we move into red zone. It's broken down into green, yellow, and red, right? Red zone is where things get violent. The victim pulls back and is like, I'm leaving, I'm done. And then we move back into green, which is no, I'm sorry, here's some flowers, it'll never happen again. And we just loop and we loop and we loop and we loop and we loop.
Until you're like, I need to get off this crazy like merry-go-round.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I feel like that's how most people decide to go and get help. It's mm-hmm. get off of that cycle.
Most people decide to get help when people who care about them have said to them over and over and over again, like, this is not okay. What you're experiencing is not okay. And sometime one day, like, it just clicks and you're like, oh my God, you're right. This is not okay.
So I have a couple other questions. So let's see. When this is happening to someone, I had a question about whether or not it changes the way that your brain functions. If there's like something, because people are saying that they feel like they kind of get stuck in the time that they were dealing with abuse. Sometimes feeling like not like they have even gotten older. I got a comment about that. I can't find right now what she exactly said, but it was, you know, feeling kind of stuck. Is that something that you could talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is incredibly common to have developmental milestones be missed or be paused. When we don't have somebody who is mirroring and validating our emotional experience and furthermore, when we have somebody who is invalidating and gaslighting, or AKA, no, that is not what happened. You do not feel that way. This is what happened. You're crazy because this is what you're saying happens. That's really not it. So what happens in the brain is that we create these neural pathways that are, that over time become very, very well worn in our brains. And so it becomes like this automatic response. So, for example, you know, maybe a during the course of the abuse cycle, maybe there was a physical altercation, and that physical altercation, whatever it may be, something about it, whether it's a smell or a place or a song, creates an imprint in your brain. And anytime after that, when you hear that song, smell that smell, see that place, drive past that road, you have like a beeline from point A to point B in your brain that goes, okay, this equals unsafe. And so your body goes into fight, flight, or freeze. And at that point, when you're in survival mode, you cannot use the front of your brain, which is where executive functioning happens, right? So when you're in fight, flight, and freeze, you can't make sense of emotions, and nor can you make any sort of plan. The only thing that you can do is work to regulate.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, I think I find all of this so interesting. I mean, I'm interested in it for my healing as well, because I feel like it's one of those things that you have to deal with for a long time afterwards. But I mean, also for our listeners, because I think that for a lot of people, you get to read these little short things online, like, okay, this meme or this, or like this little piece of something. But to like to hear it all put together, you know, and why, you know, the fight or flight is connected to these other things that happen. I mean, I don't ever like to say it, but I feel like for myself, certain places, the only way I can get people to understand it is to be like, it's kind of like my Vietnam. Like, you don't understand. We all grew up hearing about what happened to people in Vietnam and hearing how awful it was, right? And hearing that people came home with severe PTSD. And I'm sure with other wars too, but I'm just saying, like, from what I heard growing up. And it's like, people will say, well, why can't you just go here for this? Or why can't you just do this? And I'm like, because for me, it's like a whole range of emotions. It's very hard for me to even go into that place. And is it worth it for me? Like, whatever I'm like, you know, to go out to dinner for a night and put myself into that position just to be in that spot. But I also don't want to always not do things in my life, right? So there's other things where I have to open myself up to other things in order to heal, but that doesn't mean I always have to put myself in those situations either, is what I think anyway.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a lot of people, so sorry to stop my thought mid thought. So this link on the screen that you're seeing is for an article and an image that, represent the cycle of abuse. And it's the graphic that I keep in my office that I introduce people to the concept with. So it's a really very straightforward and wonderful graphic. So you might find that you're avoiding certain places in order to not be triggered, right? Because that's what that is. A trigger, being triggered, is when you experience something that reminds you of a traumatic event, that your body then takes you back to that place involuntarily. Like, this is not a voluntary process. Nobody is trying to go back to an awful time on purpose. Yeah. And so when you experience a trigger, you then get triggered That's the word that is used to basically say that my body is not happy right now. And when a person is triggered, you know, it can be everything from an elevated heart rate to increased or decreased blood pressure to complete shutting down and like not being able to function. Sometimes people will black out, like totally dissociate. Sometimes you, if you're a fight person, and you get triggered, your response is to like act outwardly. So we all are our primary response to trauma and triggers of trauma is fight, flight, or freeze. And we all have one of those that is our absolute first go-to. And again, it's not a conscious process. It's not a decision we're making. It's our brain automatically going there. So I'm a freeze. And I know that when I come in contact with something that is scary or dangerous, that I initially freeze in place. And it takes my brain a couple of seconds to like let me know what's going on so that I can then decide what I need to do.
I can understand that. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely a fight. I'm definitely, as soon as something happens, I'm like, I turn into like, I'm gonna fly across the room at someone. And I have to control that and realize that that's not a certain thing that's happening, which luckily I have been able to learn how to control and not have those issues as much. But I mean, it does come back because it's an instinct, my instinct. And I'm sure it's from my own traumas, because if I chose to hide in some of those situations, I might not be here. So fighting was a much easier choice in that situation.
Well, right. I mean, and that's exactly the point, right? Because your brain is saying, I have to do something in order to survive.
Yeah.
And that is to fight whatever the threat is, run away from whatever the threat is, or freeze, like, and play dead. Yeah, these are very, very reptilian, I guess, type of responses. They're very animalistic. It's like basic brain operation.
Yeah, basic survival mode. So another question was, do you think that some people start to struggle with control, right? Because you don't have control. So if you're dealing with things like this and everything's out of control, then sometimes other things happen. I know there was a question about bulimia and anorexia and whether or not that sort of thing happens, you know, with this, why that happens with types of abuse. I'm sure you can talk about that. I'm sure it has something to do with control.
So eating disorders, chemical use and addiction and dependence are two of the most common symptoms or ways of coping with trauma. And so eating disorders are a means by which people, yes, try to take back control. And it's with reference to a thing that, you know, what you put in your body and what leaves your body are things that nobody but you can control. And so when you're in a situation where it feels like there's no other things to control in your world, that is something that people go to. Self-harm is another thing. Cutting or burning, people will describe that as a means of releasing some of the pain that you hold on to. And substances are a means by which we numb the pain. So all of these behaviors are intended to decrease the pain of whatever we're going through.
That makes sense. Do you have anything to add to that, Patty, or any other question?
I've often understood anorexia as sometimes your way of stopping your body from developing. Sometimes it's against physical or sexual abuse. It's somebody's way of keeping yourself prepubescent. This is something I've heard, so it's interesting. It's a control thing. It's like saying, well, I can't fight, I can't fight, I can't freeze. Let's say it's a family member or it's someone you married or with or whatever. So you feel helpless. Not everybody has a gregarious, enormous personality. You know, some people are just quiet naturally. And so then people, they fall in the cracks. And by contrast, some people are big eaters. They pad themselves from the world by eating so much that they are just kind of like, oh, there's that big person over there. Or it's kind of like you lose your identity and you become unattractive to the abuser. So it can be either, because it's very complicated. Some people are so far gone. Like, for example, my friend who I met when I was 18, she had undergone so much abuse that she consisted of weight shakes and not eating. And I believe, after thinking about this for so many years, that this was her way of, like, well, I'll die, and then, you know, then you'll get arrested. That's what that's why this person said to me when I met them, what if I go to jail? Will you stay with me? And, of course, that's not how we met. I mean, there was it's the three stages that you mentioned. It started out, oh, look, this is this amazingly interesting and you know, physically attractive person, and they're showing me so much attention. And so you have your phase one, and then the phase two is, what do you mean you're eating fish? You know, if you're not a vegetarian, so we've got your militant vegetarian who beats women up. That's a great combination there. Total lunacy. And this person's still alive and they're out there. That's what makes me so angry. Okay, so then they say, I'm so sorry that I hurt you. I'll never do it again. It makes me want to chop my hand off. And then I'll take a knife and threaten. Then you have to stop them from hurting themselves. And it becomes this terrible cycle of, like, very bad lunacy.
It is, you're at higher risk of entering into relationships with people who are abusive when you've grown up exposed to people who are abusive, because we learn that this is what is normal, right? So, because as children, when we're exposed to any sort of abuse, we spend our lives trying to make sense of that. And oftentimes we do that by recreating abuse, or trying to recreate the relationship dynamic, to master it. Again, this is a subconscious process. Sometimes it's conscious, but a lot of times it's a subconscious process, and people don't realize that they're sort of constantly re-engaging in relationships with people that are abusive in ways that are similar to their childhood abusers.
Yes. I think, you start to see patterns. I think for me, because I've always been a singer and I've been out in the public and I've been dealing with, and I'm sure you know this too, Patty, I've been singing in front of people since I was like 7 years old. So people always give me lots of compliments. So that was a good way for people at first to get to know me and get me into that sort of cycle, was to give me a lot of attention and give me a lot of, like, oh, I'm so interested in your music, or, you're so good at what you do. And I I've realized now how some of those things work out, because it's like you said, the idealization phase. And then it goes into when I finally say, hey, no, I can't do this for you because, you know, I'm busy or whatever. And then that's when the abuse starts, even if it's, and this doesn't only have to be, like we've talked about, it could be friends, it could be coworkers. It does not have to just be either a parent or a lover or a person that you're close with, because I mean, that's kind of how I guess the term mean girls is making it not so bad, but there's people that like work together in pods, which I have another question about. Someone wanted to know more about the definition of flying monkeys and how they actually cause more problems to the person that is dealing with the abuse. Can you maybe give a little bit of insight on that definition?
So, yeah, so I'm gonna put a link for folks. So I'm using resources, references from Psychology Today, which is a website that is, highly read, highly edited, and very, very readable and user-friendly. So flying monkeys is essentially the harem who belong to the abusive person, and they may or may not know that they are sort of under the spell of this person, and they will sort of take on the narrative that this person has and carry that forward, right? So like maybe a person who's a flying monkey is someone who's like buddies with this abuser and is like, no, no, Jen, you're the problem. You did this, right? And this person has no experience or witnessing of the relationship with you and that person, but they've got this narrative that has been ingrained in them that they then carry forward with them, and they believe because the abuser is so very convincing and provides all of this plethora of information to support the statements that they're making. And the second part of the question was why is it harmful? Can you say that again?
No, it was just they wanted to know more about the definition of flying monkeys and okay. How to avoid them. But okay. I don't really know how to do that.
I think what you look out for is people who sound like they're parroting the abuser, right? Like you hear sentences that are like the same, like, oh, you know, Joey says that to me all the time. And you're like, oh, that's a red flag. Like this person, you know, you don't spend very much time with them. So how are they going to know this? Like, where did they get this information from? So when you, I think a good flag is when you hear people around you saying these narratives about you or telling you things about yourself that are probably feel true because you've heard it for such a long time, but are the same as what the abusive person would be saying to you. That's kind of one way to start to see who might be a flying monkey. And also, you know, depending on where you are in your recovery from abuse, your normal meter starts to adjust, because usually folks who have experienced abuse, their normal meter is like broken, and it's really hard to know what's normal and what's not normal. And so if when you're farther along in your recovery and you start to recalibrate your normal meter and start to trust your gut, you'll notice that there are very particular sensory experiences that you'll have. Like you might not even have a direct conversation with a person, but just their energy makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up, and you got to trust that.
Yeah, definitely. So this kind of rolls into it is the question. So, okay, I guess this will go both with flying monkeys and dealing with seeing like your abuser. how do you deal with gray rock, and what is gray rock, and how do you deal with those interactions, I guess? What is the question? I mean, that's, I got this question so many times because I mean, I think this is what a lot of people deal with. So if they have to see the person that was like, you know, inflicting that abuse, say it was an ex-husband, then they have to deal every week with drop off, right? And drop off feels like it's a minefield. It's like, you don't even know if you can say the right question. Like, oh, how was the kid's day today? Minefield, right? So you have to figure it out. And I mean, I'm taking that as an example. I'm not divorced. I don't have to do that, but I've watched it. I've actually had students where their parents used my house as the drop off. And I could literally feel it on my students and feel it within the like drop off, like what was happening. And it was a lot of emotion. And I was like, well, I guess they chose a neutral spot because they didn't want to even go to their own home. So how do you deal with that if you have to go to a holiday, or if, you know what I mean? Or if it's a relative, but then you still want to see your other relatives, how do you deal with the gray rock, and what is gray rock to?
So I think first of all, the most important thing is to know that it's okay to say that I can't go to fill in the blank, whatever the event or thing is, right? Like if there's an option for you to not go, you're allowed to say, I'm not going to go because I'm in a place where this is going to be harmful for me. And I think one of, that's a new way of thinking for a lot of folks who are survivors. And also I want to be mindful of the fact that I am aware that in extreme circumstances, if you don't go, there could be physical violence as a result. So first and foremost in all situations is safety, your safety, your kid's safety. If you need to go, because if you don't go, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you, then go. So the gray rock is really just like, basically once you're separated from that person, and even if you're not separated from that person, trying to express the least amount of kind of reactiveness to them, because folks who have narcissistic characteristics and narcissistic personality disorder really feed off of the energy of the response, and it gives them something to then, gives them more fuel for the fire, right? So the idea is to like stay expressionless as possible, to have like limited, super limited responses, to pretend that what they're saying or doing doesn't bother you at all. Because when you show that it bothers you, again, that's fuel for the fire.
Yes, definitely. Because they're looking for your emotions, right? So that they can attack whatever emotions. And I know, I mean, a certain phrase that was said not too long ago to one of my friends was the word has been, which I think was on purpose. Right, Patty? Like, so that
was definitely on purpose.
So that could cause a lot of damage, you know, and I think that that was done for a reaction and things like that. Like people just put these little things into your head, and then you have to try to like, you know, sort of like not react and walk away. And I guess that's why it's called gray rock. Like what's more boring than a gray rock?
Yeah, exactly. So there's going to be another link that's coming up to an article about this idea of gray rock being a strategy for the interactions with these people. And so if you're, you know, if you are doing a drop-off pickup and a kid exchange, right, like as little interaction as possible.
Yeah, just like stick to like business, right? That's the business of the matter.
Yes,
and not
business.
Anything of the heart of the matter.
More exactly.
Just so y'all know, this has been is on the best podcast Skeleton Shelter that's ever been. And we're talking about important things that are actually helping people, unlike people who dig to the very lowest part of to try to find your flying monkey trigger. and, you know, just hurt you with what they think is going to be the fuel that, that is going to ignite some kind of reaction to you. And by incidentally, this person is also a big liar. Notice that I omitted the word fat. I didn't say they were a big fat liar. I'm just saying, I'm saying, I am Gray Rock, baby. This is what it is. I don't care. I found the space that I needed to just say, stop. What you're doing is wrong. You're lying about why you're doing it. And I am out of here. And I left. So I'm inspiring you people who still haven't left or in a confusing relationship where you're on phase number one, which is the roses and the romance and the I'm sorry's. If you're on the way around, if you're on the way back around, you know, I'll never do it again, this kind of thing. Liar. Not a big fat one necessarily, but
is there anything that anybody else wants to cover? I mean, anything. You could even tell me something interesting from the day. I mean, you know, we end this on a good note every time. We want people to listen to this, and we don't want, you know, them to leave here feeling, you know, upset or down. But this is like heavy information, and people who are looking for this information are looking for it because they're going through this now. And some people are lucky to have a support system. Some people don't. And so this is the kind of thing that supports them. But we also, you know, we've been saying that we're going to be doing music on here, which today was not one of those days because this was a pretty serious show. But you did get to listen for the first time to our full single of Gold Dust Woman, which I'm sure if you know, that's a cover that we did of a Stevie Nicks song. But it's going to be part of our Shattered Illusions EP, which is going to be hopefully done by the fall. And we can... we're going to be putting that up here so that people can buy the album, and we're going to be donating it to one of, we have to figure out actually which place we'd like to donate the proceeds to that to, because we want to make sure it's somewhere that, you know, it's actually benefiting the people. So maybe that's something we could talk to you about, Lauren. But so that's going to be coming up. And also at some point we will be doing a Patreon, but that's all of my news for today. I do have a little anecdote of my day, just to shout out to one of my best friends, that today I'm wearing his Primus t-shirt, which before today was in a Tupperware box. My friend unfortunately passed away this May, and I haven't been able to open that box because I didn't want it to smell like anything but him. But I did get two t-shirts, so the other one's still in the box. But I'm wearing his Primus t-shirts. And I was lucky enough to get some of his ashes today. So this person definitely helped me through a lot of stuff in my life. And he was one of those people that whenever I had my things going on, you need like a person to talk to. And he was one of those people. So I just wanted to say that my friend Dave was here with us today. And if he was here in person, he would be sitting over here probably pulling on my hair and making fun of me because we're like brother and sister. But yeah, so today my day consisted of, you know, researching and talking to people about some questions and getting to have a little piece of my friend so that I can bring him somewhere fun with me this summer. And that's what we've been doing with Dave. So I just wanted to introduce everybody to my friend Dave and just to have his memory in there for us today. Patty, anything?
I would like to thank Lauren for bringing the expertise that she has to so many people that feel alone. So many people that feel like, oh, I'm the only person that goes through this. Oh, roses. Oh, abuse. Oh, now I get the, you know. It gives it something official. It's like, this is a thing. People have been through this. And it personally made me feel better because it made me feel like, wow, this is a real cycle. This is not just some horrible thing that I had to bear by myself. You know, now I'm sort of holding hands with a community of other people that unfortunately... And, you know, it's a systemic problem in our society. Just how widespread it is mind-boggling. but at least we're starting somewhere. And, you know, Dave knows, heaven knows that we're all in this together. And I just, if we make one person feel less alone and also more unflying monkeyed, that would be good.
Well, unless of an alien. I used to feel like an alien all the time. I used to feel like I was not the same as anybody else. Like I was just like, you know, then you research your blood type. I'm Rh negative, so I might actually really be an alien, supposedly.
That's pretty cool.
But that's a whole nother weird thing that I've read about. I have no idea. But yeah. Right, Lauren? I've read that. You know, at first I would read things and I would be like, okay, is this really what I went through? Like, I'm not really sure. And yeah, a lot of people made me think that my head was like not put together right. Like, am I crazy? Like, did this really happen? But those things really did happen. And once you can feel that and you can get that off of you, I feel like, I mean, you said you feel better just from today, huh, Patty? Like, it makes you feel better that like, wow, I'm like not the only one who went through this, because otherwise there wouldn't be all these books dedicated to this. Like, this wouldn't exist. So,
right, people need to heal from something. You don't just write a book about healing for no reason. You know, somebody's doing the abusing and they're getting away with it. That's what makes me so gray rockish, because I don't want to feel bad. I'm like a mellow, friendly cat. And then I feel like all of a sudden the weight of the world's on me, because people, it's like if there's a hole that needs to be filled with negativity, and they see this alien, beautiful Jennifer Hill, it's like, oh, I know, I'll fill all my negative holes at Jen and say, wow, she didn't do what I wanted her to do, so she's a bitch. And I'm going to send the entire community of Swan Day against her because I'm evil flying monkey. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I can relate so well that I just put on a play for you about it.
It actually has happened.
Yeah, that is what happened.
I think I've seen that play a couple times.
Yeah, it plays over and over in your mind.
But, yeah, I want to thank you too, Lauren. I'm really happy that you came
on. Thank you, Lauren.
And like, I mean, if Lauren would like to come on again the next time we have something that, you know, you feel like you can give us some insight to, you know, Lauren, I think she's skilled in so many different things, from Reiki to aromatherapy, that I'm sure we could use her expertise at some at another time too. And I appreciate the grounding exercise today. I would like to hear what our listeners, I was going to say readers, what our listeners
they're actually reading a lot too.
That's true too. So I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And if anything that we talked about made you think about something and now you have another question or you have another idea.
Or maybe you're a lawyer and you've been trying to, you know, eliminate the statute of limitations your whole life, but just didn't have the format. Well, maybe we're it. Or maybe you're law enforcement and you have an ex-wife that abused you to the point where you had to get a divorce and you're a guy. And it's like, well, you're not supposed to be beaten up if you're a guy, especially if you're a police officer. This is an actual person that I know. So
that's an upcoming show. Is actually, we're going to have a couple of men on here to speak about their situations, because yeah, a lot of people don't really think about that. And I think it's hard for men to navigate that as well, because it's kind of a whole different process. So that's something that we're going to be talking about in the next couple of weeks. But for tonight, we're just going to end with our Gold Dust Woman. And we hope that you have a great night. And we will see you not next week, but the week after, because we do every 2 weeks back here at 8 p.m. for Skeleton Shelter.